to the Retail Tech Podcast, where we dig in deeper into the technologies that run retail, online, in the store, and everywhere in between. Today, I'm speaking with Zoe Levitt, analyst at CB Insights, a venture capital and investment analysis platform. She focuses on retail tech, among other technologies, and recently published a report covering the funding of retail tech companies in Q1 2017. So I wanted to dig in deeper and learn more about how that report came out and learn some more about the data. How are you today, Zoe?
I'm well. Thanks so much.
Thank you for joining me. So to start it off, I want to clarify the definition. When you say retail tech, what exactly are you talking about? Are you talking about hardware, software, combination?
Sure. So it's a fairly diverse category that we've really built out here at CB Insights that encompasses B2B startups that are offering tools to retailers to optimize their in-store operations. So of course, there's so much buzz everywhere you look about e-commerce and how sales are moving online and to mobile. But when you look at the data, roughly 90% of sales still take place in physical stores. And while, you know, department store chains may be closing stores left and right in some cases, the most retailers still do maintain large store fleets so that they're looking to squeeze every last dollar out of as much as possible. So these startups are offering both software and hardware to help them do that. This includes everything from software to help improve the point of sale, maybe powering store associates to take payment on iPads so they can roam the sales floor instead of having to stay at a stable cash register. It includes beacons that track shoppers as they walk throughout the store so retailers can get a better sense of foot traffic, common routes throughout the store, maybe in-store customer demographics, that sort of thing. It also includes other tools for store associates, proximity marketing for to send maybe targeted text messaging when customers walk near a store entrance, et cetera. So really a whole lot there, and mainly generally geared towards helping retailers get as much data out of their store visitors, just like you would to a visitor to an e-commerce website.
Okay. Yeah, looking at the retail store tech market map infographic that you have on your article, I'll put a link to this article in the show notes so people can actually take a look at it. I mean, you've got, as you mentioned, beacon-based analytics and marketing, augmented reality, tools, indoor mapping, omnichannel analytics, payments, point of sale, visual shelf monitoring, that's interesting, connected shopping carts, digital signage. So there's definitely a lot of different things going on. So from your knowledge about what has happened actually as far as funding, can you break down, for example, which one of these categories are hottest right now?
Sure. I think as you can see from the infographic, tools to track shoppers throughout the store with beacons, hardware, sensors, as well as software, such as even sensing the Wi-Fi signals emanating from shoppers' phones to track them throughout the store. That's a very crowded category. But in terms of where the most money is going right now, some of the most well-funded startups in the space are actually those that focus on the financial side of things. So this point-of-sale financing, I think the most well-funded startups in the space are in this category. So these are startups that make it easier for retailers, especially luxury retailers or high-dollar furniture stores, et cetera, to offer on-the-spot payment plans to shoppers. So this is something Again, kind of interestingly, that some of these tools were initially available to online shoppers that you might expect. Oh, when you're, you know, buying something very expensive on a website, they might offer that. That website might offer you a payment plan option instead of requiring you to pay all up front. But we don't really expect that to see that in stores. But these startups are usually on mobile, letting people apply on the spot in the store when they're standing at the cash register for an instant financing plan and receive approval, and then pay for that purchase month by month instead of all up front. So these are platforms that are extremely scalable, could be applied to, you know, luxury clothing stores, jewelry stores, right. Education centers, services, all sorts of things. So I think this is very attractive to investors because they see here's something that could really transform the entire sector of in-person shopping. So that's very,
Yeah, that's true. So what are the, I know there's a couple of really big deals with those companies. Let's talk about those two, maybe.
Sure. Let's see. So another, again, currently the most well-funded startups in in-store tech are in this financing category. So these include Flexity Financial, which has raised over $280 million, Zibi, which has raised $272 million, Financeit, which has raised $228 million. These are some of the top, most well-funded in the sector. But we're also seeing a lot of activity more recently in these sort of plug-and-play solutions for full in-store customer tracking. So for example, the largest deal in 2017 so far was a $30 million deal to ZenReach, which is a startup based in San Francisco that offers a plug-and-play solution for stores and restaurants to offer guest Wi-Fi systems. And when you, of course, you know, as you might want to, getting a coffee or shopping, you want to connect to the store Wi-Fi, this system will track you and then, you know, be able to monitor repeat visitors, gain demographic information, you know, what sort of websites you're looking at while you're in the store, and then keep track of you and be able to send you targeted marketing campaigns in the future. So ZenReach is, in particular, has backing from some pretty high-profile investors, including First Round Capital. Interestingly, Ashton Kutcher is actually one of the investors in ZenReach. He followed on in their deal this quarter. So we're seeing, you know, so that's a popular area. And then there are some other startups offering these more holistic shopper tracking solutions, such as Retail Next, which has raised $189 million in total, and Euclid Analytics. These are major players in the space as well.
So on that topic, you know, as a customer, as a shopper myself, you know, I definitely try to get on the Wi-Fi when I can in my, you know, when I'm in the store. But what I find most of the time is that the Wi-Fi in the store is often less, it's slower than my LTE, because so many people are sitting around, I don't know, watching videos or something and getting on those.
Yes.
So this is, it's a problem and it's a good benefit. So the only challenge that, I guess the question that I have is how willing am I as a consumer to basically give all my, you know, I guess some kind of access or personal information to the store just for, so they can, you know, market to me later. So
Sure, that's a good question. And that's a really good point. I also have personally found that often the Wi-Fi is slower. So that's funny that you bring that up. So I think, you know, that shows a lot of room for improvement, in these startups, and also maybe if retailers are offering their own Wi-Fi options, maybe they should be looking at one of these startups instead if they have a faster speed. But I think a couple reasons. I mean, one, I think a lot of people don't realize that their data is being collected and tracked when they sign on to store Wi-Fi. So perhaps the retailers are counting on that veil of ignorance there. And then additionally, I think the value add for the consumer will be very important. I mean, when we search for something on Google or increasingly on Amazon, we know at some level, at least, that data is being collected and used to retarget us later on. But that data is relevant to us. It's personal data. And people are willing to give up a lot for that increased convenience, maybe even increased even financial benefit, maybe a 10% off offer down the road, something like that. So I think, you know, the key for these retailers and startups is making sure that the real concrete benefits outweigh that sort of queasy feeling you might get when thinking about your privacy. And that's very strong. I mean, right. You know, we certainly see we're willing to give Google Maps our home address, Uber our home address, all that sort of thing. People are absolutely willing to do that in the moment for that added speed and convenience.
Right. This concept of personal privacy, sometimes you talk to people and they'd say, forget about privacy anymore. I mean, it's already too late. To a good extent, that is true. Just like you said, whatever we do right now is being tracked by somebody somehow. There will be a time that people are going to say, you know, wait a minute, I want to have more control over this.
Absolutely. And we see it. I mean, it's interesting to see even, you know, when I'm working at CB Insights and looking into some of these startups, you know, I'll be looking into the information about the deal and visit the startup's website. And then the very next other web page I click onto will already be showing me an ad for that startup. Yes. So you can see how instantaneous this all is, you know, even though I was just looking at it for work purposes and not interested, of course, in purchasing myself. That tracking is real. And this is a very interesting point that you bring up, because I think one of the ways that we have felt a little more comforted in terms of privacy so far is that businesses have not been great. The commerce sector as a whole is not fully able so far to combine our online and offline data. So we have that comfort that these are disparate data sets that are not being combined to track us in very holistic ways. You know, maybe a e-commerce website can track some of our online activity. And then when we go into a store, the store knows that a person purchased, you know, an item, but is not able to connect that person and that purchase item to their previous activity online. And this is the goal of a lot of those startups, is to merge the tracking of those online and offline activities. So, you know, in sort of an ideal world, I guess, from the retailer's perspective, if you'd previously visited their website and then you go into their store, and even if you buy that item in person, in the store, in cash, that they would still be able to make that connection that this is the person who visited their website, and this is a purchase that was influenced by online information, that they can then, you know, learn more how to optimize that information, learn the impact their online marketing is having. Because again, increasingly it's impossible, it's sort of meaningless to consider the online and offline channels separately. So to be able to merge those data sets and track people across the full range of their activities is very, very valuable and sort of the holy grail.
Right. Even for the consumers, for the shoppers, I think it's definitely a value to have one experience with a retailer. So on that end, it's good for both ends. I just think that the disclosure and the setting the expectations is a key part. And that's where the value of the trust comes in play. The most successful retailers online and offline are the ones that people trust more. If you can gain somebody's trust, you will sell a lot more to them. If you don't, then every sale is going to be a challenge, really. Every sale is going to be a new one. You know, be honest with me, and I'll give you my money if you deliver what you promised. One of the things that I've seen recently also is the use of video online, you know, like with Facebook live video and, of course, Twitter. Did you see any startups and any companies or any retailers actually taking advantage of Facebook live video, for example?
Sure. So that's a little bit outside the scope of this sector, but I actually have seen some really interesting uses of video technology in even the in-store retail sector. So there are a few startups, the category that we call visual shelf monitoring, that's in the infographic. We're seeing some really interesting uses of this video technology, even in stores, not even to record shoppers necessarily, but to watch the products on the shelves. So there are some startups including Eversight, StoreFlix, Trax Image Recognition that visually monitor products for companies like Procter & Gamble or Unilever. I'm sorry, these are not specific clients of theirs, but
Right.
Brands that don't support their own stores but sell through other third-party stores that want to make sure that those stores are presenting their products properly, and providing the visually appealing display cases that the brands were promised, that sort of thing. So these startups are using artificial intelligence to parse the images that are recorded by video and then turn that into data that can be presented back to the brands. So that's a very interesting use case that I think was something that I hadn't, not something that I had thought of going into this research. And then there's some also startups working on interactive displays in the store to potentially, again, make the store experience a little bit more entertaining and engaging in a way that an e-commerce website could on a website through things like quizzes that can suggest products for you, videos embedded in the website, as you mentioned. So these startups install often tablets or small interactive kiosks in the store aisles to attract shoppers to the kiosk, get them maybe to play a little game, and the game will A, collect a little bit of demographic information on the shopper to maybe track them or retarget them in the future, but also make the experience more memorable and steer them towards specific products. So there's
Okay.
a lot of innovation going on there.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Especially the shelf monitoring software is pretty interesting. We all think about don't get distracted by the bright and shiny objects, right? That's a
Just
concept,
difficult.
right?
Right,
But if
sure.
you don't pay attention to these bright and shiny objects, you're going to miss what the consumers might be using. So you can't completely ignore them either. That's the balance. If you don't try something, you don't know how it's going to help you. How do you decide to give something a try? I think that really
Sure.
goes to the knowledge. I mean, the people that run retail these days are not, they can't be just retailers anymore. They have to really, they have to be technologists, they have to be analysts, or at least
Absolutely.
they need to be talking or listening or reading really the right sources. A retailer goes to one of the conferences, and you may see 100 different companies providing customer loyalty. How do I decide between these things? So that's like a missing piece, is people really helping get beyond just the marketing message, helping retailers make a decision quickly, educate them in how to decide, factors that you should be thinking about. I mean, those are things that really save them time.
Absolutely. And a lot of the startups that seem to be the most successful in this space are the ones that offer full sort of plug and play solutions, so they don't require a long onboarding process for the retailers. So I think that's very appealing for the
Right.
management teams that are so busy, as you say.
Right. Yeah, I just met a very interesting company that we'll probably do a podcast with, and that's the bottom line, is the make it simple.
One of the most important things for app developers is actually paring down on remembering that what people want is solutions. They don't
Right.
want features. And when you're
Exactly.
kind of in the development bubble, it's easy to get very excited about, oh, we can add on, tack on this and tack on this. And it feels very exciting for you inside of it. But from your customer's perspective, they just want the end to achieve their end goal.
Going back to your report, this is another interesting concept area that I see is called digital in-store assistants. That's
Yes.
pretty interesting. What do these companies do?
It
Robots?
is. Yes, there's a little bit of variety here. Companies, including Fellow Robots and Simbay Robotics, do produce robots. So these are robots that I believe, yes, they're already deployed in some stores, and these robots can serve as in-store assistants to not necessarily replace, but supplement the floor staff to answer easy questions. So these robots, I believe I'm thinking of Fellow Robots. They're about 3 to 4 feet high, and they have a screen on them that shows a map of the store. So for very easy questions like where's the bathroom, where's a specific department that I already want to know where know I want to go to, the robot can just quickly direct the guest to that area. The robot can also process requests in different languages, which, it's unrealistic to expect a sales floor staff associate to speak 6 or 7 languages, but the robots can. So a lot of use cases there. And then again, to get back to the video, they can also generally visually scan the inventory as they wheel around the store just to make sure that everything is in its proper place and nothing's being stolen. They can also maybe bring out more restocks from the back room, that sort of thing. And then, yeah, another startup in this category, Satisfy, they make the software underlying that. So they don't make robots themselves, but they have an artificial intelligence platform that they white label for different retailers and robotics producers to put in to be used in the store, either in the form of a robot or in the form of an iPhone app that you can text while you're in the store. So you could open the app and say in natural language, I'm looking for a present for my mother. And the chat bot will start suggesting things to you and tell you where to go. So also, in the early stages in this category, but a lot of potential.
That's very interesting. So it looks like on the funding side, some companies, some investors or accelerators actually focus on specific areas. So what I see is on like this in-store assistance, Fellow Robotics and Simbay Robotics helped out of Hacks, which is, I think, a hardware accelerator.
Sure. Yeah, there's a pretty wide range of investors getting into this area since it does pull from a lot of different verticals. So in the among the startups that are producing hardware, such as the interactive screens or the robots, we're seeing more hardware-focused investors, including I think even Motorola Ventures may have funded one or two, Qualcomm Ventures. They're pretty connected to the Internet of Things space. And then some of the more traditional VCs tend to focus on software. So I believe, for example, Andreessen Horowitz has funded one or two startups on this list. Salesforce Ventures, it looks like, has backed a couple interestingly. So a really a combination of sort of Sand Hill Road venture capital firms, as well as corporate investors from both the retail space, the sales space, and the hardware Internet of Things space.
Right, and I see a lot of, I mean, it's there are some companies, some VCs that focus on retail, tech and commerce, but I mean, I see a lot of other names on this list as well. So,
So, for like Lira Hippo is a VC firm that's funded a number of sort of direct-to-consumer e-commerce startups, but fewer in the in-store space. Whereas, again, some of the corporations and internet, more typical Internet of Things investors are more in the in-store tech space. So, it's an interesting collision of worlds, a phenomenon here.
I think that would be kind of an interesting breakdown or a different way of looking at this list is to put it into the terms of the actual investors and see how many deals they're doing. So that would
I
be
mean,
kind of
one thing to
interesting.
call out that we don't see is we do not see retailers investing in these startups, which I think I've written
Uh-oh.
about a bit on the blog. I can pass that along as well. But we see, I guess, Salesforce Ventures, Google Ventures, Qualcomm Ventures, these tech companies backing some of these startups that are for use inside retail stores, whereas the retailers themselves that are partnering, that are using these services are not themselves investing in them.
They're missing in action.
Right, exactly.
That's a really good point. The way I've seen some retailers, larger retailers, handle or at least try to address this is by their own like labs, right?
Little mixed success there, I
Right,
think.
right.
So I think part of the problem is that a lot of these retailers are looking for ways to cut costs in the moment, whereas these technological plays are more long term. So if you're going to invest in a startup or launch an innovation lab, that's capital that's going to be tied up for the next 5 to 10 years. Whereas, especially in the department store sector or sort of the mall retailers that are closing stores left and right, they need to free that up pretty quickly.
Right.
I'm certainly not saying investment or innovation centers would be the best strategy for everyone, but I think it would do retailers well to pay more attention to what's going on in this space and who the backers are. And you do
Definitely.
see situations, for example, this is maybe the most a popular anecdote in this space, but Amazon acquired Kiva Robotics, which was a robotic startup that was for robots to be used in warehouses. And a lot of warehouses had designed their entire space to serve these robots to they'd built their entire structure on the assumption that they'd be using Kiva Robotics, and then the company was acquired by Amazon and just swept away. So they were sort of left out in the cold. And this is a possibility that companies need to keep in mind.
Right. Yeah, the one example of a company that's I think doing a good job in trying to innovate is I think Target and in their
Yes.
incubator or accelerator with Techstars. So they've kind of partnered with an experienced accelerator to do that. So not trying to reinvent the wheel on everything themselves, but also staying involved. So I think that's a good idea.
Right. It is. It's good. And Walmart certainly is doing a lot. Walmart's actually doing a lot internally to digitize its stores as well. They have dozens and dozens of patents that we have on the CB Insights platform related to improved experiences at the cash register. Even, I think, yes, Walmart was recently granted a patent even to use drones inside retail stores to ferry merchandise back and forth between the back room or the loading dock and the shelves in the stores. So they're thinking of a lot of these ways internally too.
Okay. So the other area that I see over here that has a few good, a good number of deals is employee tools. I had a talk with the director of retail at Cisco Retail, and they had a report that came out, and one of the top areas, gaps that they had identified was employee productivity. So this is why this caught my attention. You've got Branch Messenger, PredictSpring, Salesforce. These are all basically tulip retail. They're d designing tools for use by store associates, but mostly mobile tools, right?
Yes. I think mainly to improve the communication between sales associates, so they don't. There's less risk of a customer looking for help and not finding it, or one individual staffer not knowing the answer to a question when someone else does across the store. So mainly, I think these are mobile messaging tools that store employees can use.
Right. And then,
Sure.
yeah, so there's, I mean, definitely there's a lot of interesting ideas here. And I would love to talk a few hours about this, but we don't have
Of
time.
course,
So
right.
thank you so much.
It's an exciting space. I'd love to talk further.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you again for having me on.